How's it hanging, everybody? Welcome back to Tag Team, Pokemon Trading Card Games from your podcasting trio. My name is Riley Holbert, joined, as always, by my good friends, Mr. David Akriwal and Mr. Andrew Mahone. Folks, how are we doing today?
Pretty good, Riley. Just getting ready to move to New Jersey.
Are you excited? Are you hyped? I mean, you said it very matter-of-factly, I feel like.
Yeah, my wife just signed her offer letter to work with the New Jersey Symphony. Starting in June, so we're going to be doing a lot of things.
Oh, yeah, that's quick.
We're going to be doing a lot of things, namely having a child and then packing up the house and moving.
Oh my gosh. I don't know if I could do it, man. I hate moving so much. Having a child at the same time sounds like a lot.
Hey, you know, humans it's amazing how far we can stretch the limits of the human existence.
Existence? I thought you were going to say, like, you know, our own sanity or something like that.
I mean, that too. Yeah. We could... That works, yes. Also.
Okay. Well, JW stretching the limits of human existence and potentially his sanity. Andrew, how are you doing?
Chilling, man. Had a great Easter weekend. Just got to relax, you know, went to a Good Friday service on Friday. I did a reading during service, so that was nice. That was fun. It's the first time I've ever done that.
Nice.
And then on Sunday, we just relaxed, and Natalie made an amazing dinner. It was so good. And I'm feeling refreshed today. I went on a couple of runs over the weekend. And played more TCG Live on the iPad than I ever have outside of stream. the entire weekend, actually. So I stayed up till 4 a.m., like a total degenerate Friday night. I was just grinding away on the iPad, just playing TCG Live. You know, just because I, especially after missing Vancouver because of the, you know, the chronic pain and everything, and start of a new format, I'm like, you know what? I'm not messing around. I'm just going to, like, pedal the metal. I'm going to grind and actually put in some time. And I'm also kind of enjoying the post-rotation format. So,
you heard it here, folks.
Best format of all time.
The post-rotation format.
Well, I always enjoy brand new formats. There's a certain kind of excitement when you feel like the format hasn't been min-maxed and totally figured out yet, right? Yeah. You feel like there's still some aspect of discovery. And that's my favorite time to play Pokemon cards. It's one of the reasons I really love Gym Leader Challenge, because I get more of that kind of, like, feeling of discovery more often than I do in Standard. But at the beginning of a Standard format, especially a new rotation, I really do get that kick, so... I stayed up till 4 a.m. You know, on Saturday night, I had the iPad. Dinner was ready, and it was like I had the iPad out, and I was like, "Hold on, I gotta finish this game." And Natalie was calling me iPad kid. I'm like, at the dinner table. It was totally heinous. And I stayed up till like 2 a.m. that night. I grinded to like Arceus rank in like 12 hours. They made the TCG Live ladder like way too easy. I don't know. At first, it was like it was only James Cox and Arceus tier, and now it's like, you know,
the pendulum is swinging.
Yeah, right, the average player should be in Arceus tier.
Now you can get to Arceus tier.
Don't even speak to me.
Are you in Arceus tier, bro?
No, I'm still a Great Ball tier. That's why I have the license to say that.
But you are in the top few percentiles of Metafy coaches, so you know you do have
that. Many people are saying this, yes, indeed.
Many people, namely you. You're the one who I found that out from, on Twitter.
Did I post something?
Is there like any other mechanism to find that information besides you just sharing it?
No, there isn't. And actually, I've been thinking about making like a little behind the scenes video, because I feel like nobody knows how much people make on that platform.
Go for it, dude.
Hand of fist. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. So now it's like, I grinded to Arceus or whatever. And it feels like, I mean, TCG Live did, the TCG Live devs team did like very much changed the way the ladder is structured. Now you can get to Arceus rank with a 40% win rate, is like the numbers that I'm hearing from, you know, Twitch chat and everything. And it's like,
so you don't even have to go positive?
You just have you to don't even games. Have to go positive, dog. Yeah. You just have to play. And there are 3 weeks. There are 3 weeks left on the ladder, and I like no lifed it for like one night, and was like, "Yep, well, here's my green sweatpants, here's my green sweater, here's my green visor, and here's my iron leaves sleeves. I'm done."
It almost it feels like closer now to how the TCGO ladder was, where it's just like you played games, but it didn't actually represent anything. It was just the amount of games you played.
100%.
That's how it feels with TCG Live now.
Fascinating. That's so interesting that you could have a losing win-loss record and make it to the highest tier of our game.
And apparently, you cannot D-rank out of Arceus. I didn't know because I haven't gotten to that point. But apparently you cannot D-rank out of Arceus. Well, I haven't had a losing record since being in Arceus, I guess.
I wouldn't know because
I'm like, you know,
guy I'm, like me doesn't lose.
I'm that freaking dude, you know? But people who would know told me that
well,
you
so
cannot,
here's the
in
problem.
Fact...
Here's the problem, right? Because if you have a losing record and you can get all the way up to the highest rank and then you cannot D-rank, how do you actually know that your deck is good? And this segues well into the question that I want to ask you, Andrew, is what deck did you rank all the way to Arceus tier with this weekend?
I played exclusively Dialga V-Star.
Exclusively. Okay. Yes, and may I also ask, what is your top play for EUIC this weekend?
Whoa, we're really hopping the hurdles here. I mean, we've got a whole hour to talk about this. What's up with that? You know, no build up, bro. You just.
I think it. You know, there is something to be said for.
I mean, if they're not the same answer, I feel like something's wrong.
Yeah. No, I've been playing Dialga V-Star for like 3 days, 4 days straight, probably. I think I have three full streams where I did nothing but play Dialga V-Star, and then I had the two binge nights over the weekend where I just iPad-kitted, you know, Dialga V-Star. And I think it was Rose. Three straight nights because I did a little bit of testing with Jesse as well. So
Rose
like
put a 40-hour work week into Dialga V-Star.
Yeah. So for nothing... If for nothing else, I think I should probably just play it because I've got so much time into it. It's just like...
That's unhinged.
If you've ever played the game... I mean, you've been playing the game for a long time. You ever, like, get the itch with a deck where you're just like, this deck freaking owns, and you just, like going through the motions with it? You gotta just kind of, like... You gotta just kind of, like, pursue that. Because it doesn't happen every format.
Yeah,
you know?
and if you can find that right deck list early enough in the format, then I think that's where, you know, you have a little bit of surprise factor. Your opponents certainly, you know, 7 out of 9, I'm sure, at EUIC are not going to have played against a Dialga V-Star deck. So
they certainly don't
the
have it in their
lines.
Testing rotation. They don't have it in their testing rotation. I can almost guarantee you that, right? Which is, like, sick. And that's nice.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, there's lots to talk about for EUIC, so we don't need to get all the Dialga V-Star chips on the table out of the gate, but I guess that's the angle that we're coming at to start with this.
Is that I have way too much time into... I have way too much time into that deck. That's just... Yeah. That's
kind
where
of
I'm coming
though.
In.
It's like a little loot box every time you look at the top four with the Matang.
Well, it's extra fun because you put the cards on the bottom. Right, and so you get to keep going.
Yeah, and actually the skill expression of seeing the top four cards and then putting them to the bottom, I mean, is unparalleled in the game right now. And doing that multiple times a turn.
I don't think we've ever
seen
anything.
Like, and then you got to remember the order of each of the four cards and where they are at in the deck. That's kind of crazy, dude.
It's basically like card counting in poker, bro. You know, I'm thinking in 4D.
Honestly, like,
I know.
Several times more advanced than that.
I mean, there does. I mean, it's kind of fun. We kind of say this in jest, but there is a point in the game where you should know every card in your deck and the exact order.
Well, like to a degree. I mean, in iterations
you shuffle
of four.
Them at 10.
Yeah, yeah right. In iterations of four.
In iterations of four. Yes. In iterations of four, you should be able to like, and that's the thing is I have not played the deck physically yet. I have only played it on the godforsaken TCG Live app. So, and I'm a very visual person. So like, I feel like having an idea, like I physically put these cards on the bottom and I remember putting that card on the bottom and I know that I have not taken it up and shuffled it yet. Like that's really going to help with me being able to visualize where the cards are when like the digital thing is just doing its crap. Like it's very hard for me to remember where stuff is.
Yeah. It like TCG Live sometimes like actively dissuades you from picking up good habits. So like, you know, when you're doing like the Matang, right? It doesn't show you the non-metal cards by default. You have to like actively go in and click them. So if you're just going through the motions, like
you have no,
you
it's
don't
like
know.
Making you play worse, you know, just by virtue of how the game is built, which is, it's a whole other thing. But like, I totally agree. Like the experience of playing a deck like that in real life, it's a lot more intuitive, I guess, to like pick up that stuff and keep it in your head.
The one last thing I want to say about, because I spent a lot of time with TCG Live this weekend, off stream, on mobile, right? Well, I guess technically mobile, iPad, which is like a very slight upgrade from the mobile experience, in my opinion. However, still absolutely horrendous. Having to play vertical with my bench stacked all weekend. The fact that I can't play horizontal on the iPad absolutely makes me want to gouge my eyes out. And everything's... It's literally the phone app stretched is what they're doing on the app. It's literally the phone app stretched. So everything is super low res. It just is awful, awesome. Right? Yeah. You boot up a game and then there's this like little visual bug that every time you boot up a game, like there's this little red explosion on the right side of the, just every single time, there's a little red explosion out of nowhere. It's just like, randomly, it's like a little happy explosion for no reason. But so... Anyways, there's like, it's kind of interesting because once you actually get to Arceus tier, and I think someone in Twitch chat today said that Arceus tier is the new Greninja tier. So, and it kind of feels that way.
Like a great ball or something.
Well, like it used to be. It used to be that like once you got through the Cleffas and the Pichus, you landed in Greninja and you couldn't rank down past Greninja. And anybody who just played the game should be in Greninja, right? That's kind of what Arceus tier feels like.
That's what
JW's
sitting right now.
Yes.
Hey now.
I mean, it gets like slightly interesting once you're in Arceus tier because every win gives you 10 points and every loss is minus 10 points. So like you can kind of somewhat tell how much someone's been winning lately, I guess, you know, based on how much positive they are on 1600. It's like 1620 or whatever Arceus is. So, like, if you get matched up against, like, a 2,500 or a 3,000, you're like, dang, this dude is just
sweaty.
Grinding, sweating it out over here, like, absolutely sweating, like, dripping all over his keyboard, or hers, or theirs, yeah. So, yeah, so that's, like, a slightly interesting thing.
Last thing on TCG Live before we could, like, actually talk about UIC, I'm just, like, shocked you were able to endure playing Dialga for that long on TCG Live because there's glitch where when you Matang it like freezes your client basically and it happens all the time. Like I played Dialga for like a couple hours the other day and I was just so perturbed by that. I could not grind like you've been grinded, bro.
That's crazy. Every time I try to play on my iPad it just shuts down. Not the iPad itself, but the game just will turn off.
Yeah,
I can usually.
We
just
had a
get
slightly older. We had a slightly older iPad, like slightly older. I'm talking. It was like maybe a 2018 or something, and like the game would not boot up on it. Like
yeah.
Just straight up. Just
I mean,
straight
this
up.
One
like
we
it
bought,
just crash instantaneously.
We bought this iPad this year. I don't know that it was a brand new model, but it was sealed. So we're, you know, I would have guessed 2021, 2022. It just shuts down pretty much every game. Or, like, on the start of the game, it'll just shut down. So then I lose all my ranking points. So I was pretty close to Arceus tier, probably.
Right, probably, yeah.
Before you fell down to Greninja.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyways, those are the TCG Live escapades from this weekend. Just an absolute disaster. Yeah. God help that client.
For sure. For sure. Well, this coming weekend, we got the European International Championship over in London. Andrew and I heading over there. I think both of us are flying out tomorrow. So that'll be fun and exciting. GW will be watching from home, trying to get some TCG Live games in on his iPad. Perhaps failing at that. So this episode, we're going to primarily be talking about the landscape heading into EUIC. It's very dynamic, obviously, in a new format. Things are changing constantly and rapidly. So I think it'll be a really fun, exciting tournament to tune into. So I think that all said, let's maybe lay out the top contenders going into EUIC. I mean, I think when I think of this tournament, Charizard is the first deck I think of as kind of being the front runner in the format. GW, you've been pretty outspoken that you think Charizard like sucks in the format, but I think the general sentiment is the opposite.
I'm ready to walk it back.
Oh. Oh, yeah. The week before EUIC.
I'm ready to humble myself and walk it back slightly, ever so slightly. I did say earlier that I thought Charizard would have zero top eight placements. I think it's going to be highly played is the problem, and I do feel like the lists have been largely optimized. We talked about, you know, just in a new format how there's really not, there's so much unexplored potential. But I think with Charizard, there's some techs especially that are rising to the top for me that give this deck an edge. I was thinking that the Chen Pao matchup was pretty bad, and I do still agree with that. I do think it's favored for Chen Pao, but you think about Airy, you think about the TM Devo, and then even potentially Turo in that matchup being ways that you can, you know, obstruct and restrict and potentially even beat Chen Pao. So the Turo I'm thinking of, where you could like remove a two prizer from your board and leave only one prizers kind of at the end of the game, where you're attacking with like a Radiant Charizard or something like that, right? And then Rare Candy your final Zard for last knockout or something like that. So Airy obviously very potent into the Baxcalibur deck. The Devo can be tough. We saw from the show match, I don't know if you guys watched that this weekend, between two former world champions, Henry Brand and Vance Kelly. Henry pulled off a very disgusting play where he Airied Vance's last rare candy and then Devoed his Baxcalibur with the Charizard deck and was able to win because there were no more ways for Vance to get a Baxcalibur in play. So while I do think Baxcalibur does hold the edge, you look at things like Max Belt as well in Charizard as being something that can sway by, you know, fractions of percentages in Charizard's favor. And so I think even too early on in the format, people aren't going to be able to really play around Airy or aren't going to know necessarily how to play around that card, which I think plays also into a deck like Charizard's favor. So not to focus in on that matchup in particular, but I know I have been playing a lot of Baxcalibur. I feel that is my top choice, and that was what I felt gate kept Charizard. But now after seeing high level players play the deck and seeing some results in these online tournaments, I'm willing to give Charizard a little bit more credit.
How about you, Andrew? How are you feeling about Charizard?
I think Charizard is, in a lot of ways, that deck. It is that top dog. It's the biggest, most represented deck in the metagame, and also seems to be one of the most winningest. I think that there is certainly something to be said for it being like a comfort pick and that people just kind of like it. They already have it sleeved up from the format before and they can transition to the new format very comfortably without needing to learn any new strategies, any new routes, anything like that. It is a comfort pick. I don't know that I consider it to be the strongest deck in the format. Mm-hmm. I'll give it a top five spot, but I think it just is the most popular deck in the format. I mean, it's a freaking Charizard. It's the best Charizard ever printed, right? And there's that comfort factor that is that's accompanying it. So I think that that's kind of the biggest thing about it. It is also just incredibly strong. It's good.
Well, so you're saying it's that deck, but then you're also saying it's a top five deck. So which is it?
It's that deck that people are going to play. Like, it's that deck in that, like, it's going to be the most represented deck in the room. In that respect, it's that deck. I don't think it's the tournament winner, though. I don't think it'll win EUIC. So I think it's the most popular deck, but not the strongest choice, if that makes sense.
Reserve the top placement for Dialga V-Star.
That's right.
Yeah, when I think of Charizard, go ahead, Editor.
Yeah, no, Riley. I was actually going to ask you. Yeah, like, what are your thoughts? Because we've been kind of yapping away, but what do you think?
I think it's that deck in so far as I think Charizard is kind of the litmus test where other decks need to be judged against, if that makes sense. So Charizard will be one of the most played decks in any given room, and it feels like to me that you need to be kind of around that power level or higher to even be considered a viable deck. You know, if you're not able to like swing into Charizard matchups and win, then in my mind you have to be like considering why you're playing that deck at all. Because Charizard can just do the attacking thing so well. So if you can't attack at least as well as Charizard can, it seems like a waste of time in my mind. So in that way, I think Charizard is that deck. I think Charizard ceiling, like the highest output Charizard, is lower than like the highest output Shen Pao, is lower than the highest output Dialga. But I think that's also fine. You know, it sets a lot of checkmates. It's really consistent. That's one thing I really like about Charizard. I see it as kind of like the barrier to entry, so to speak, into the format.
And I think that what is so interesting about Charizard is that it is kind of, I mean, it's the most, between Charizard and Giratina V-Star, I say they're the least changed decks coming into the new format. And they translate extremely easily. And because of Charizard's popularity, I think to what you said, it determines which other decks are playable because of how popular it is.
Yeah.
So when you actually go and you look at Charizard's matchup spread, like, you know, I'm just on the back end of Play Limitless right now, it doesn't look great, right? Yeah, I mean, it really doesn't.
It's not great.
It's not incredible. I mean, you're talking like a pretty much 50-50 against Chen Pao Baxcalibur. Charizard's real, you know, great matchup is the Future Hands matchup, which is like looking like a 60-40. You got like a 70-30 against the Ancient Box deck, which just has like a really tough time dealing with Charizard. But Charizard takes tough matchups to Giratina Lawstone Box. It takes a tough matchup to Lugia Archaeops. It takes a tough matchup to Snorlax Stall, right?
Yeah.
It takes a tough matchup to this new Gardevoir deck. Pidgeot Control. There's a lot of matchups here that are looking like tough matchups, and like that's crazy for like a deck that we're talking about as like a top tier deck. How can you take that many tough matchups and still be a top tier deck? I feel like we're at the point where it's like everybody's beating Charizard, but Charizard has to adapt to figure out how to beat the things that are there to specifically beat it.
Yeah, I mean, Charizard has seen resounding success in Japan, and obviously we don't translate one-to-one. I think Charizard will continue to see success, if nothing else, by virtue of popularity. But it does have that kind of big target on its back, and I think every deck is going in with a plan to beat Charizard. And it's impossible for Charizard to do exactly the inverse. You know, Charizard can't have a plan for literally every single other deck, but every deck knows what they're trying to do going to Charizard.
Exactly. So, Charizard, I think, will be the most played deck at EUIC. I think that that just makes sense. But what other decks are on your radar? We know that, you know, for you, JW, it's Chen Pao Baxcalibur, and we've kind of talked we've talked at length about that. But for you, Riley, what other, you know, decks would you say are like majorly on your radar, or are maybe surprising you with their results this week?
Yeah, I would say primarily I'm down to two decks, and the first actually is the Dialga deck. I'm really enjoying it too. I've played a lot of it online as much as I can bear with the glitch on TCG Live. And then the other deck that's top of my radar is actually Chen Pao. I think Chen Pao's ceiling is really high. And in a lot of ways, like, Chenpao and Dialga are kind of doing similar things where they're trying to like wipe a board out quickly and then do a lot of damage to continue following up. So, you know, they're, if you like break it down to like core tenets, they're operating off similar principles. Chenpao, I think what's makes me a little anxious about it is I think Chenpao will probably be the second or third most played deck in the room. And, you know, I don't feel super comfortable at the prospect. And JW, I know you're going to say like you can like outskill every Chenpao opponent you play against, but like, you know, and then maybe that gets you through like round five, but like, you know, come round 10, you're playing against your fifth Chenpao mirror. And like, do I really want to be in that situation? My answer is probably no, but it's still high off on my list. And after that, I think there's a pretty severe drop off before I'm really considering another deck. You know, Charizard, I guess, would be my third pick, but I don't know. It's more of like a holy shit, like I'm the night before and I hate
I have
all
nothing
these other
else.
Decks.
Yeah.
I like need to play Charizard right now.
I'm thinking like, I think the three most popular decks will be Charizard, Chenpao, and Future Hands.
Sadly, I mean, that deck is cheeks. That deck is so bad. Oh, well, okay, so it's not horrible. There's a correct metagame with which Future Hands thrives in. But I will say this is one of the most overhyped decks to performance that I've seen in a long time. Like, this is just one of those decks that I think a lot of people were really anxious about, really hyped about, excited for, and it's come onto the scene and it's really underwhelming. Again, there are certain metagames where it's correct and it's good and it would be a great play, but that's not the metagame that we're in right now.
You know, the irony of your take on the Future Hands deck is that people would have said the exact same thing about Mirrodin. The exact, you could have taken that monologue and swapped it, talking about Mirrodin during the time you were highest on it. and you would have been like, no, all those bad matchups on paper, nah, we win those.
They didn't even have any bad matchups, though. That's the craziest thing, bro.
Charizard matchup was bad.
Well, no.
And the Gardevoir matchup before hands was like not good.
No, the Gardevoir matchup was fine. I actually, yeah.
See,
it was fine.
You still have this.
It's not even cope.
So you're the Iron Hands guy.
You're an Iron Hands guy.
No,
so that's the irony. Yes, you are an Iron Hands guy,
bro.
You're the archetype.
Oh my gosh!
You know.
Oh my gosh.
I deny the bad matchups. Yeah. I do not see the bad matchups.
No, they were good matchups. You had Path, bro. You had Path. You could be anything with Path. Future Hands doesn't have that. That's my issue with Hands, guys. That's my issue with Hands. It's like, there is no comeback. There is no comeback. Okay, you could play
your... That is true.
You could play your 3 Iono. I don't give a crap. You start that one Mirrodin. You start that one Iron Hands. Oh, I'm going to accelerate to my Iron Hands. Oops, they gusted my Iron Hands and knocked it out. And maybe I even had the baton on it, but I didn't have a second Hands down. So those energy go to waste. So now I'm going to Mirrodin you again and try to set it. Like, it just doesn't work. It's just not
okay,
even...
Okay, I think some of that is, like, straw manning here. Like,
You
definitely can get those, like, stable turn ones. I agree there's no comeback. Like, if they respond to your attack, you lose.
Yeah, there's no judge path in the deck. Like, there's
but
no
I don't think
comeback.
It's as like simple as like they boss your Iron Hands and you lose on the spot.
That's basically what it is, bro. You ever play that matchup with Chenpao? That's literally prime catcher knockout your go. Like,
yeah, man, it has a 46% win rate versus Chenpao. The sell for the Iron Hands deck is it thrashes like
Lugia.
Single prize.
That's it.
Decks.
Yeah, Lugia and the single prize.
It thrashes sure. Lugia. But the format desperately needs a deck that thrashes Lugia. Because Lugia, and one of the previous casts, I said I thought Lugia was a top three deck. JW, you told me you thought I was off my rocker. Lugia is continuing to do well.
Yeah.
And
I'm coming around to Lugia too. Yeah. Because the thing that holds it in check.
JW, you have the opposite opinion of Lugia every single week.
I know. Well, the thing that holds Lugia in check is the Future Hand stuff. Right? It's the Future Box. And so if there's no Future Box, then Lugia is great.
Well, so we need the Future Box deck.
No, we don't need the Future Box. It's garbage.
You don't want Lugia running these streets, dog. You don't.
Does Lugia actually run the streets? I think Lugia just beats some of the decks we like. Like, I have the Limitless thing open.
It doesn't beat a
20% win rate versus Future Hands, a 35% win rate versus Chen Pao.
Yeah.
Like, and a 40% win rate versus Lasso. Like, to me, that's just a not a viable deck. Like, Lugia and Future Hands are kind of operating off similar matchup structures, to be honest. Just with different decks. Like, Lugia takes foils. The 70-30 versus different decks.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically opposite matchup spreads, but with the same ratios.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Yeah, no, I have been liking Lugia a lot, though. We'll see.
You know, going into an international championship, I'm looking for a deck with, like, more even keel matchups, more things that are looking like 50-50s, 55-45s, 60-40s at like, you know, not really trying to have like those 70-30s and those 70-30s going both ways. Like, that's not me, dog. Like, no way. Now,
yeah, I mean,
yeah, go ahead.
When you think of like the international championships and what's won them, like over the entirety of their history, it's always the deck that is like taking pretty even keel matchups and plays four of every single card in the deck. Like, that's what wins international championships, like, time and time again. Look at every single one of Tor's international championship decks, and besides the Zoroark Gardevoir one, they're all like that. I just that's what I think of when I think of an international championship winning deck in a new format. It's something that plays four of every card. It's very consistent. It takes fine matchups across the board. It doesn't have any mind-blowing ones. And, like, you just beat the bricks off of everybody trying to play something funny, you know?
Looking at Chen Pao's matchup spread, I mean, it seems like it really is kind of that. If we're talking about a deck that takes pretty even matchups against almost everything, like, Chen Pao is that deck, except for, I mean, its weak point is its stall matchups, right? Like, yeah. You're pretty much not winning those. But then it does have, I mean, it has that matchup spread if you just kind of ignore it. And I remember, you know, seeing some people chatting about this on Twitter, and they kind of agreed. I mean, it's just like you kind of take that L. I saw an online tournament was won by a Chen Pao deck playing Minior. I don't know that I love Minior in Chen Pao. It was also playing three rods, so I guess, like, the idea is you just have, like, kind of extra buffer to be able to put those energy back into the deck. To be able to continue seeing them with Minior. One of my beefs with Minior is it doesn't even one-hit KO a Snorlax with, like, a charm on it.
Yeah.
But, I guess that's
the real,
an option.
The real issue with the Minior is if they play Mawile. So if we see stall players, you know, preemptively play Mawile so that they can counter the Minior, then yeah, sure. It becomes an ineffective tech at that point. But a lot of these stall decks don't play Mawile. Will they for UIC? Maybe, but Minior's a solid tech for a deck like Chen Pao right now.
Yeah, I guess it also depends if you're expecting like the Pidgeot style control versus the Snorlax heavy control.
Yeah,
like the Pidgeot style controls don't give a crap if you play a Minior, but the Snorlax ones obviously are gonna not like that as much if they don't have a Mawile.
One of the craziest decks I played against over the weekend during my, you know, TCG Live binge was I played against a Pidgeot control deck with, like, a few Snorlax in it, and they played the Radiant Charizard, like, the list that won the Brazil Regional, but then they also played a Charizard EX, so that they could... So it was, like, it stalled, and it also attacked. It very much was, like... If you don't set up enough guys, I will just knock them all out. Which is kind of funny.
Yeah, I mean, the Pidgeot is not popping up as much in, like, these online tournaments or anything, but you gotta imagine, like, real stall heads are at least thinking about which kind of variation of stall they might play, especially given that Snorlax is the more on people's radar version, then people have a better game plan against the Snorlax decks. You know, you can see those Pidgeot ones, like, really make a showing. This one from Late Night has my favorite card as Wigglytuff.
Yes, I did see that. That I played one of those on ladder. It was pretty scary. Had 450 health after they slapped a... Or wait, 400 health after they put a hero's cape on it. It was crazy.
It'd be 450, right?
Or, yeah, sorry. Yeah, I was right. Yeah.
Yeah. I told you Wigglytuff had potential. I told you.
You're so right.
Well, you guys know what isn't scary?
What's that?
My pubic hairs, man. I'd be keeping those things trim.
Spitting.
With my Manscaped products. That's right.
Let's go. Are you going to elaborate on that any, Andrew?
Yeah. Manscaped is the sponsor of the Tag Team Podcast, and we'd like to thank our sponsor, Manscaped, for supporting the cast. If you would like to help support the cast as well, you can shop Manscaped and use code TAGTEAM at checkout to receive 20% off and free shipping. Manscaped has a huge selection of men's grooming products that you can use to look and feel your finest any day of the week. I use mine all the time. I like the Lawnmower 5.0 and the ear and nose hair trimmer.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love the lawnmower myself as well. I'm also, for audio only people, I'm down to a mustache right now, and that was thanks to the aid of my beard hedger, also a Manscaped product for your facial hair. So if any of this is interesting to you, go to manscaped.com, use code TAGTEAM at checkout. And hey, from what I hear, you are much more likely to make day two. Potentially, you know, science doesn't say for sure, but potentially you're much more likely to make day two if you wear those boxers. So again, code TAGTEAM at checkout, 20% off plus free shipping. And thank you so much to Manscaped for sponsoring the cast.
Indeed. So, carrying on, talking about our, you know, our meta discussion. What are we thinking of Snorlax? I think Snorlax was kind of like the big bad coming in, realizing how tough Airy was to play against. Airy has started cropping up in some Charizard decks and things like that, kind of just popping up, you know, wherever. How do you think that Snorlax is going to fare at EOIC? I mean, I pose this question to both of you. Is it a serious threat? Is it going to be widely played? Are Snorlax players kind of scared off of the deck by decks like Lugia and Tina?
No, I don't think so. I think that you certainly don't have a game plan into Lugia, but you can beat a Tina, you know, enough of the time that that's not like the worst matchup ever. So I do think, again, early in the format, with the hands players keeping Lugia in check, I think stall makes the most sense early on in the format. And so I expect to see plenty of different variants of stall, either the classic Snorlax stall or even the Pidgeot stall or even some crazy text like you were saying, Riley, with the Wigglytuff. I think there's a lot of things to be explored within the archetype. And I think it'll do better at EUIC than it will in future tournaments down the road. I think like EUIC is where it's at. And then, I mean, even for like Orlando, I think the meta could shift drastically enough that, you know, Lugia rises to the top in terms of overcoming the future hands hate, making it a much worse play for subsequent tournaments.
Yeah, when I think of Snorlax, I was really on Snorlax a couple weeks ago. I think it's kind of at a similar place as it's always been, to be honest. Like, I don't think Airy fundamentally changed the game for Snorlax, to be honest. I think a lot of its matchups kind of stay the same. You know, it's good against Charizard, it's good against Chen Pao. We knew that. You know, Airy doesn't change that. And Snorlax, in some ways, gets less consistent because it loses, like, Peonia, for example, to grab those cards out of the prizes. So, you know, I think we'll see someone go on a hot streak, you know, just like we saw Cal going on hot streaks in this last format. I think it'll probably make an appearance in a top eight. I don't know if it's, like, as overwhelming as maybe people hyped it up to be. It does have Giratina keeping it in check, which I do think will be pretty popular. I think Lugia will be decently popular, too. So, Yeah, some people go on hot streaks with it. They'll hit a bunch of Charizards and be like 11-0, and that's like expected almost. You'll never hear about the Snorlax who drowned in pools, though. You never hear about those guys.
Mm-hmm. No, right. And then Giratina, V-Star, Lost Box, Tina, right? There's a bunch of different Lost Box variants. I mean, Lost Zone has kind of been this kind of shape-shifting deck over the course of the last few weeks where people are trying to figure out what the best kinds of Lost Box partners are. We have the Lost Zone Tina deck, which feels pretty firmly set at this point. It plays an Iron Leaves. It plays a Forest Seal Stone. It plays one Rescue Board. It plays four Grass Energy now so that you can, like, Iron Leaves a Charizard, right? It plays maybe, like, one Stadium. And that's kind of, like, that's kind of the Tina deck now, right? There's no Paths anymore. Still, you're playing Roxanne's. You might have one Iono. That's kind of that. You know, what do we think about these new partners that have been popping up with Lost Box? Do any of them hold any credence? And what do we think about Tina Lost Box?
I think it's a fine deck. I can't fault anyone for playing Tina Lost Box. I think that, you know, maintains a pretty strong position. Being able to do that, you know, hit that 280 reasonably early, and then following that up with just one shots on EXs, you know, big EXs, Charizard, for sure. So I feel like it's in a fine position. It's not a deck that it has overwhelmingly favorable matchups to anything, but you're going to play, you know, you're going to play most of your games. You're going to be in pretty much every game that you play. You got to decent navigable stall matchup, and I think that's something that a lot of players value. And then just being able to get in the game against a lot of other decks, I really don't fault anyone for choosing that deck. It feels like a very solid tier 2-ish deck for me right now.
Yeah, I haven't played a lot of Tina myself. I've been a little underwhelmed when I see opponents playing it, but I mean, it really didn't lose much of anything, right? Like, Escape Rope was hardly even a loss because people were not even really playing Escape Rope in their Tina lists anymore. So, like, it looks the same, and it functions very similarly, just changing out some cards for some new ones that got printed in the Iron Leaves. You know, it loses Path, I guess, but it doesn't seem to be really impacting the matchups that much. You know, Tina's still doing fine against Charizards, which is a lot of the reason you'd play Tath in the first place. So, I don't know. It seems consistent. It seems good. I don't think it's on my short list personally, but kind of with JW, if you play it, it makes sense to me. It's a fine deck to play. And considering that we are saying that Charizard is being that like really popular deck, Tina is favored into that matchup for exactly the reasons JW is saying. Like, you just put out a ton of damage early and then you swing for guaranteed one shots late game. Like, that's a good strategy.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's just solid and has good stall matchups, and I think that that's probably what draws people to it. I do think that I like Giratina as the basis for a Lost Zone deck the most. I mean, there are some other kinds of strategies that I've been seeing. There's like a Radiant Charizard, Crisis Punch, Cramorant version of the deck. There is where you can Crisis Punch for free. There's this... there's like the Hands and the Roaring Moon with the Lost Box, like that whole thing. There's an Ancient Box Lost Box deck that plays like the Long Neck guy, you know, your Raging Bolt with Sadas and Colruses all together. I was not very impressed by that personally, but that is a thing that I have seen as well. I do think that just Tina is kind of that guy for me. It's the big bad. It can do all the, you know, all the damage. It feels like the least gimmicky of all of them. Abyss Seeking is just a solid plan.
That's what I was gonna say too. It's just like it always has the Abyss Seeking play, which, you know, those other decks sometimes are fumbling on their hands for moments there, and Giratina is just snappy. Like it gets the Abyss Seeking off. It's swinging for 280 the next turn. That's good, you know.
Exactly. Now, one deck that I've been playing against a lot, you know, I hadn't been following the online tournaments too closely up until, you know, I mean, kind of like looking at some results right here to talk about for the cast, but over the weekend, I was kind of able to gather what had been doing well because people love to import lists and try them out on TCG Live. And I had noticed huge uptick in Gardevoir EX decks that I was playing against. And sure enough, it is, what, the 12th most popular deck on Play Limitless right now, kind of creeping up there. And it's basically Gardevoir EX with, like, Drifloon and Screamtail, and it's got all the tools, and you just try to do that whole thing. So what do we think about this? I remember Jesse told me that he thinks, like, some good players could gravitate towards this deck at EUIC. What do you guys think about that?
I think it seems extremely fake. To be honest.
I mean, and it loses to Dialga, so.
Does it?
Oh, are you kidding me, bro? Are you kidding me?
No, I mean, I think Garmin was actually probably fine against Dialga because it swings for one shots on the Dialga, but
yeah, okay.
I think otherwise, Gardevoir is extremely like middling. You know, you're looking at losing to Stahl, you're losing to like these Lost Zone decks, you're losing to the Iron Hands deck, you're losing to Chen Pao. Like, what's your angle here? You're taking a 50-50 to Charizard. Like, I don't know. And yeah, I mean, Gardevoir just seems like a lot worse than it was. I don't think anybody can deny that. Losing Mirage Step was huge. Mm-hmm. Losing the Shining Arcana Gardevoir was huge. And you have Charizard and Tina staying at like the same power level with you taking a step down. And Gardevoir was already kind of like the less popular of these decks. Yeah, I don't know. That seems like fraudulent to me, but I'm happy to be proven wrong.
Yeah, it feels really tough to play a deck that gets so explicitly worse and less consistent. And I mean, it loses so many pieces. And also has like this glaring weakness in that, like, if your opponent just plays Lost Vacuum at the wrong time, you're like, whoa, the whole plan is foiled. You're like, you know, you're trying to promote these single prize attackers that you're putting these big tools on to like make them big so that you can, you know, put more damage counters on your Drifloon than its natural HP would allow. And then if your opponent just vacuums away the tool, then you're in crisis mode, right? They have to promote something else, so they take a double knockout on what should have been just a one prize turn, basically because you're just damaging your own guy too much. So that innately bothers me about the strategy, and that there's no other kind of, there's no other great attacker. All your best attackers have to have the tools on them. Mm-hmm. They, you know, and then your next best attacker is literally Gardevoir EX swinging for 190. So there is no Zacian V. There's not even that, like, you can't even bust out a Zacian at the end of the game and just be like, all right, we're doing it. Here's the nasty one hit KO. Like, no, it's never that easy. So it hasn't impressed me in the games that I've played against it. But I can't deny that it has been popping up, and I think that maybe it's just been popping up more on the ladder because people want to see what the hype's about, right?
I feel like it's more that, to be honest. I mean, I could see people, like a couple of good players, rolling up with Guardy as like the old reliable sort of thing, but I think the wheels have fallen off the Guardy train at this point. Like, it's operating at such a lower capacity, and that just doesn't seem like a tournament-winning deck, you know, to borrow from UJW. It doesn't seem like a tournament-winning deck right now. Like a League Cup-winning deck, maybe.
The other deck that I've been seeing slightly more than I expect, which the expectation was zero, to be fair, is Espathra. I feel like I've seen more than zero players messing around with Espathra.
Well, Espathra is really interesting, isn't it? Because you have a deck that in the last format, people tried to play But now, without Path, you really aren't losing much from the strategy that people were trying to play last format. But without Path, now all of a sudden it kind of can open up and can flourish. You have these decks that rely on basic Pokemon, predominantly like the Future Hands deck that can sometimes struggle already fulfilling the energy requirements of its Pokemon. And then you add another one to it, potentially two if you have the... League headquarters in play. That could be tough. Of course, Lost Zone still exists. You have things like Great Tusk Mill. I mean, there's just some of these random decks that rely on the one prizers or basic Pokemon that can really be harmed by a Spothra. And then add into the fact that you can one-shot a Charizard. That makes for a pretty attractive deck choice for a lot of players.
A lot of players.
Yeah, all, you know, 10 of you. But what more do you want, right? You have built-in draw with the Xatu. You have this kind of disruptive infinite damage Pokemon, right? EX. I don't know. There's a lot of things to like about a Spothra. I haven't put enough time into it, but it wouldn't surprise me to see this deck perform well in Europe.
I could see a top 32-ing Espoth.
No, like, dude. I could see a top 8 for sure.
Top 8?
Whoa! Whoa! I like the enthusiasm.
Think about it, right? Because you're saying that, you're basically saying that Charizard is going to be the most played deck, right? We're saying that. Okay, yeah, yeah. So you're taking like a, not an auto win, but you're taking a very favorable matchup into that deck. Let's talk about the Future Hands deck. We think that that's going to be... probably a top 3-4 most played deck, whether we agree that it should be there or not. And so good matchup there. Chen Pao Excalibur is sneaky good, and I'll tell you the strat that you need to do against that. Since they rely on items to get their energy back, you can wait for them to have exhausted all energy, and then you can counter catcher up a Baxcalibur and use the attack on the Banette, an item lock, until you can, you know, finagle your board to get the win there. So I think that there's a lot to like with the Spothra. I think it's kind of sneaky good.
I mean, there are certain decks that just hilariously cannot deal with the Spothra's ability. Like, I mean, you think about the min-maxing of a Charizard EX deck. The fact that we're at the point where it's like, it's 6 or 7 fire energy and 2 rod. That's it, right? There are no more energy than that. I mean, we have whittled it down to the bare essentials. And then you put a Pokemon like a Spothra in the active that says you have to have an additional energy on your Charizard to even swing into me. And when you put that extra energy on, you're allowing me to easily one-hit KO you. That is a problem, right? Iron Hands, hilariously, needs a ton of energy to even touch this thing. It's a problematic ability for quite a few decks. And it's kind of funny. And I think the interesting thing is that Spothra is now existing in a format without Path, right? So it is this kind of unexplored entity. Like, where does this card actually fit in a format where its ability can do what it was intended to do?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm with you. Like, the Charizard matchup kicks ass. It's awesome. And then it kind of feels like you're running off fumes from there with the spot. I could see it, though, putting together like a top 16. I'm going to be the middle ground here. I could see it. I could see it putting together a top 16. I think top 8 is a stretch. But you know what? If you're willing to make that stretch, more power to you, straight up. Like, I don't know. There's like a lot going on in this deck, and Xatu is like not the draw engine I would want to support a deck with this much going on.
Well, just watch it
now.
Watch it top 8. Watch it.
JW was in our voice chat yesterday asking what the optimal Flittle was, as if it wasn't obvious.
That's true. There is a 50 HP one and a 30 HP one. So I task you with
what?
With
what they don't. What he's not telling you is the 30 HP Flittle is for your treat. This is play the 30 HP Flittle.
Yeah, but the 50 HP Flittle has a great attack.
A great attack?
I don't know. I don't think it does anything.
It would have to be pretty great in my mind to outdo the free routine on your evolving base.
Yeah, it does like 240 for one.
Well, shit. Whoa! Like, let's get that in there, actually.
Why isn't everyone playing this deck?
All right. Another top 10 deck that we haven't really spent any time on. Arceus V-Star.
Arceus, yep. It had to be Arceus.
Who is bringing Arceus V-Star to EUIC? What type of players?
Yourself.
Who is doing it, and what's your rationale? Do either of you two have any insight?
I mean, I think Arceus is fine. Like, again, it feels like that kind of deck where it's like, I can't really fault you for bringing an Arceus Giratina deck, because you're going to play all the games that, you know, that you that you're there for, right? That you stay in the tournament. Like, you're going to have turn to attack more than any other deck in the room, more likely, right, than not. And so I think there's a lot to be said for that. Just being able to play the game, you're doing the, you know, you're doing the 280 there towards the end of the game. You're maybe throwing in a little bit of disruption, either with a Judge, Iona, or an Airy. And
you have a good Espathra matchup.
Yeah, you have a good Espathra matchup, of course. So it seems like a fine play. I don't know why this is getting like the hate from you, Andrew. You're just kind of like, who would play
Arceus
this deck?
Just so reliable in my mind. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's, you know, you're losing to Lugia, and that's about it in terms of hard L's.
Yeah, I mean, it seems fine, right? You're losing to Lugia, and then anything that techs a fighting Pokemon. Right, so you might see like a Lost Box deck that'll play a Hoopa or something, but yeah.
Other than that, I mean, the matchup spread is fine. It is fine. I mean,
and
it's
here's
really
the thing
not
with Arceus, I like hate playing against Arceus online, because if you miss like anything, like they're just doing their thing every time, pretty much without fail, and they just like capitalize on mm-hmm. people trying to get cute. You know, they capitalize on people making these goofy lists. And Arceus is like the deck to do that, because it always does its thing. It's super reliable. So I think Arceus is fine. It's a great like backup choice. Great emergency button. Honestly, you know what? You heard it here first. I'll promote Arceus to my emergency button over Charizard, even. I think it's like better for that role.
Attaboy.
Well, I mean, we've talked at length about like what kind of decks win international championships.
Yes, and Arceus is exactly is, like that kind of deck.
It literally won the last EUIC. last year's, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Alex Szymanski. Yeah.
Right. And it kind of feels like it's in a similar place right now as it was when Alex played it.
An Arc Vulpix deck, sure enough, won EUIC. And Arc Vulpix is like still a popular variant of that to play right now. You're kind of talking like Arc Vulpix, Arc Tina, or dare I say it, Arc Armourish. is the other one that I've seen.
I think we'll keep Armourish in the binder this time around, but
the silly deck.
I think Arceus is actually fine. You know, kind of memed on it at the start when you were introducing it, but it's like it's all reliable, you know. It's in the case. You whip it out when you need all reliable to come in handy for you.
You know what? Maybe I'll sleeve up an Arceus deck here. I have like, I have six decks built to bring to London for playing.
And you're telling me there's no way there's six decks that are better than Arceus in that list of decks.
I didn't say six decks that are better. I have five. I have five decks that are better and one Dialga deck.
Yeah, and I think this is the time we should kind of cap this episode off with the Dialga talk. So why, Andrew, would you ever select Dialga as your choice? Give me some thoughts on why this deck has captivated you as a play. You're going to fly halfway across the world and potentially play this deck.
It's a third of the way across the world. Let's get the facts straight.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna.
It's just across the pond. It's over the pond, dog. It's just
over the pond.
Yeah. Yeah. It's across the pond.
Across the pond.
Yes.
Dude, I'm Googling that what to make say? Sure you're saying the right term.
Let's see. Is an ocean the pond?
That's a saying. Totally. It's a saying.
Can an ocean be a pond? Oceans are much larger than ponds and have salt in them. Oceans cover 3/4 of the Earth's surface, and oceans can have large waves. That's the difference between a pond and an ocean for preschoolers.
Thanks.
It is impossible to see the other side of an ocean.
Got it. Anyways, Dialga's freaking Dialga's freaking sick, bro.
Okay.
That's the.
All right, hey, thank you guys all so much for tuning in this week.
All right, so what I do like about the deck is that it has a lot of comeback potential. I don't feel like I'm ever out of games. I feel like there's usually a route. There's a route at most points, which makes each game that I play kind of like fun and engaging. There are some very powerful, you know, plays you can make with the Star Chronos V-Star power, and then the ability to one-hit KO pretty much anything on board after that turn is taken. So, it feels like in some ways you get to play as a kind of control strategy. You can pinpoint what you want to knock out and when. The Dialga V-Star's V-Star power pairs really well with Matang because, you know, you got a few Matang set up. You V-Star, then you get to like re-roll your Matangs, right? So like it snowballs momentum in more ways than one. You're not just snowballing momentum as far as like taking prize cards. You're also snowballing momentum as far as like your energy in play and your board state. Your board state can go from like just two Matang and a Dialga with 5 energy to like 2 Dialgas with like, you know, fully established Dialga V-Stars, a fully spread board. Your board doesn't exist anymore. I've Iono'd you to a low hand size and now it's your go, bud. Right? Which is enticing. I mean, that's just very... It's fun to be playing a deck where I feel like I'm never really out of the games that I'm playing. And then I also do just enjoy the tinkering aspect of it. I feel like it's a deck that's like relatively, I would say like relative to how good I think the Dialga deck is, I'd say that it's relatively underexplored as far as like really hammering out what the top tier list, you know, should be looking like. And I think that's because a certain amount of people are just going to kind of write it off as like a silly strategy, so they're not even going to try. But I think that the deck is a lot stronger than what people expect of it right now, and that's kind of motivating me as well. Like, you could imagine someone, if someone felt like they were on the cutting edge of like breaking open this format's like Gardevoir list or this format's like Raging Bolt Sandy Shocks list, like, I am not even remotely considering Raging Bolt Sandy Shocks. I see that deck, you know, on the ladder and like here on the results, and I'm like, nah, I wouldn't play that. Like, and there's a lot of people who have that attitude about Dialga. And then like being the kind of person you'd be like, well, I could prove you wrong though. Like that's motivating enough for me. Like what we did at Worlds with Maridon. Like that's motivating enough for me to like to send it, right? Just to see. Because you miss all the shots you don't take. If we never played Maridon at Worlds, then, you know, we weren't there for that part of Pokemon history, right?
That's right.
But we were.
That's right.
And it was sick.
It was sick. Glorious. It was
bad decks are bad, decks are bad until doubt. They're good.
Yeah, there was a lot of doubt on Maridon prior to Worlds. There was.
There was.
Yeah, I mean, just to expand on some of Andrew's thoughts, since I have played a decent amount of Dialga as well, I think Dialga is another really great deck at punishing opponents. You know, I think of Chen Pao and Arceus as being similar and that they can really snowball an advantage. Dialga definitely can punish an opponent for a slow start. You know, that Starcrotus is like as brutal as it gets for that sort of situation. I think Dialga as well you know, I think the last great era of Dialga, the last time people were excited about Dialga was when the, like, Maridon variant was found, and you mean Maridon for the stupid little Magnemite and the Rotom, and you use Rotom's ability. Like, this is way better than that. Like, let's be real. The Magnezone sucks, and Matang is just, like, 10 times better than Magnezone. It's more reliable. Its energy searching is just better because you're not shuffling the deck, and so you can keep stacking them up. So, you know, if people were remotely excited about that Rotom deck, like, this is just the better version of that. You know, this is just objectively better than that. And it's in a format where the power level has dropped due to being immediately post-rotation. Dialga definitely has potential in my mind, I think. And when you look at the matchups on Limitless, I don't know if they tell the full story either. Like, I think they tell some of that story, but you know, I don't really love a lot of the list decisions people are making in the space. I think they're trying to be a little too cute. And if you just focus up your list a little bit more, you can even improve some of the matchups that are on that list right now. So I think Dialga is a fine pick, and that's why it is one of my top choices heading into UIC. Its matchups are pretty decent, and they only improve by refining the list in the same way that Maridon was really unfocused before we took a swing at it. Like, Dialga feels unfocused right now.
I mean, how boring is it? Just how boring is the Pokemon TCG if every single player going to the European International Championships says, I'm only going to play the decks that everybody else is playing? How freaking boring is that?
That's right.
It's terrible.
That's right.
And then we just become this self-fulfilling format, right? Where we only think these decks are good, so we only play these decks, right? But, like, it takes somebody or some people or a group of people to show,
to rise,
you know,
up.
That it, yeah. Exactly. As you have done many times yourself, JW. And as we as a group have done.
Yes, indeed.
So sometimes you are correct and sometimes you are not, you know, when you make a bold call like this. But if you never make bold calls, then you never get to know.
That's right. That's right. And
you never get to be that groundbreaker.
Could be the greatest decision of your life, which is crazy to think about.
It could also be a disaster, but, you know.
But there's no way it's the worst decision of your life. That's the thing. It could be the greatest, but it could not be the worst. The odds are in your favor.
Totally, totally. Well, yes. I know you guys have been tracking all of your data on counterplay.gg, Pokemon's latest data aggregation and simulation tool. If you want to check that out, head over to counterplay.gg, a website made by a brilliant man. And anyway, that will do it for today's episode. I'm really excited to see you guys ball out at the European International Championships. I, of course, will be sitting at home. Didn't have it in the budget this year, but you know, there's always maybe next year. I've never been to EUIC, dude. I really want to go.
And check out our new app, fresh on the App Store, TCG Bets. Now's the time to get in.
I think that'd be so fun, dude. I really just want to, like, make one that has no money necessarily associated with it. But, like, wouldn't that just
credits,
be...
which you purchase.
Yeah, it's credits, right. Exactly. We already have it.
Wait, you win clout credits.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. Yeah.
Which are like a nebulous.
And I think,
like, Bitcoin.
I think we should also do, like, a ranking system in the game where, like, you could go at a 40% win rate and achieve the highest tier.
It's based on how much money you put in. Yeah. Somewhat linearly. Yeah.
Wait, is gambling legal? Is gambling on this kind of stuff legal? What if we just only accept cryptocurrency? That's not even real money.
Yeah, do you have
Why
to
has
your
nobody
offshore?
Thought of this?
Still, yeah, we're still workshopping this.
We have to host the servers offshore.
So if you have any thoughts to add, please send us a message over at Tag Team Pokemon on X. You can find me at Real John Walter, Riley at Smiles with Riles, and Andrew at Enjoy Friend. Make sure to follow them for updates on their journeys in London. That's going to do it for us today for the cast. We thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
See ya.